Curtis Lewa.
Two young people decided to form their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets. When you see them, you get a nice, secure feeling in your heart.
I admire Curtis Lewa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Lewa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Lewa from WAPC Radio.
Curtis Lewa, legendary New York.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Lewa. What happened today? Why? And what's next? Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
Open Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style. Open Gangnam Style.
As we continue to take you home on the drive, home at 5, I know many of you, you're getting into your cars, your pickup trucks, your vans, after having worked your 9 to 5, and it's dependent on me, yours truly, Curtis Lewa, to reconnect you with everything that's been going on globally, locally, regionally, to try to get you up to speed. And so whether you're listening on the old-fashioned terrestrial radio, right in your car and you're ready to bang on the dashboard because you don't like necessarily what you're going to hear, or it's on streaming audio on your laptop computer or your work computer, or you're listening to us on your WABC app that you can hear crystal clear from any point of call in the world. We have that responsibility of letting you know what's transpiring and, more importantly, what has fallen through the cracks. Let's look at this past weekend. After President Trump went on his Twitter rampage, talked about how James Comey, who he had sacked days before, had better beware. In fact, if there are any tapes out there of discussions that they had when Trump assumed the presidency. So that became the bombshell news all weekend long. Meantime, the North Koreans, behind the kimchi curtain of the evil seed of Kim Jong mentally ill, fired off a missile that went through the atmosphere and into space. And on the line to discuss it, as he has so often before here on the Drive Home at 5, is Gordon Chang, author of North Korea Takes on the World and frequent contributor to the John Batchelor Show, which you can hear nights here from 9 to 1. Thanks for jumping on board again, Gordon.
Thanks so much, Curtis.
Okay, so we had heard from you in recent times that many of the most common missile tests of late have failed miserably for the North Koreans. But this one apparently was a success, correct?
Yes, it was certainly a success. It didn't travel very far downrange, only about 435, 440 miles, but it went very high into the sky, about almost 1,300 miles. And what they tried to do, I think, is to fire on a very high arc, because they were trying to, first of all, test the reentry vehicle, which is the one technology that they don't have, and also they were trying to disguise the range of this missile, because this missile actually can reach U.S. forces in Guam. It fired off from North Korea, and it could very well have been an intercontinental ballistic missile. Now, most people don't think so, but there are some analysts who think that this has a very long range.
Well, now, we look at what the Trump administration has been doing, ratcheting up the pressure. Clearly, this was done in defiance of the president, and yet, because of everything else that's surrounding his presidency, there didn't appear to be any response to this testing of a missile, was there?
Well, there was a White House statement. There's going to be, I think, additional pressure put on China, Russia, and other states for additional sanctions. I don't know how far that's going to go. At some point, the Trump administration is going to have to do what the president said, and that is to solve this on our own. Because although we're getting so increased cooperation from the Chinese, we're not getting enough to stop the North Koreans. That was obvious, because Sunday morning, they tested a missile, and it was a success.
Well, Gordon Chang, you mentioned that the Red Chinese are cooperating in some ways. What exactly are they doing to put pressure on their ally?
On February 18th, they said they were no longer going to buy any coal from the North Koreans for the rest of the year in order to comply with U.N. sanctions. But we know that after that February 18 announcement, they bought coal not only in February, not only in March, but also in April. And we also know that they're buying other materials and especially minerals in violation of U.N. sanctions. So therefore, at some point, the Trump administration is going to have to pivot and say, yes, it was nice trying to cooperate with the Chinese, but they're really not helping.
And what would that imply that the Trump administration would then have to do if we go it solo?
Well, a couple things. First of all, we're going to have to impose severe sanctions on North Korea, because our sanctions right now are not that tough. And the other thing is we're going to have to sanction Chinese enterprises and banks for supporting North Korea's weapons programs. And for years and years, the American administrations, both liberal and conservative, Republicans and Democrats, have allowed the Chinese to support the North Korean missile program, its nuclear weapons program, and to participate in its other illicit commerce.
Now, I notice there are reports in all the newspapers this morning, Gordon Chang, that this recent cyber attack, this ransomware shakedown for extortion dollars, might well have come from behind the kimchi curtain of North Korea. Any evidence to that, or is this just being floated out there?
Well, the evidence is that when people have looked at the code for the attack, it resembles code that the North Koreans have used in their other attacks, including the one on Sony Pictures Entertainment in 2014. If indeed this is North Korea, and that's really the primary culprit at this point, then we have to also remember that North Korea's hackers, most of them, are actually in China, in the city of Shenyang, which is in the northeastern part of the country. North Korea doesn't have very good internet connections, and so when it attacks other countries, it uses its hackers that are based in other countries, and most of their hackers are based in China.
Now, what is the strategy of the Red Chinese that they would permit activity like that taking place within their own territory by North Korean cybersecurity agents?
Well, that's a great question, Curtis, and I think the reason is that the links between North Korea and China go back decades. And they're very hard to break because you need to have consensus in the Chinese political system to have abrupt changes in foreign policy. But also on a short-term basis, the Chinese find North Korean provocations to be very beneficial, because every time North Korea does something belligerent, we then stop talking to China about things that are concerning to us, like trade, Taiwan, South China Sea, cyber attacks. And also, we send our high-level envoys to Beijing to plead for Chinese cooperation. And the Chinese get concessions from us on other things. So basically, China sees North Korea as endlessly creating bargaining chips. So the Chinese really like this dynamic, especially because we fall for it all the time.
And then finally, Gordon Chang, from the Red Chinese perspective, their leadership in Beijing, as they watch the Trump presidency consumed by more and more controversy every day, Russia, 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 Comey, 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 did he tape, did he not tape, did he give away security secrets to the Russians in talking about ISIS and the meetings he had in the White House? From the Red Chinese perspective, what do they make of all this, and is this good for them or bad for them?
Well, Xi Jinping, the Chinese ruler, thinks it's good for them, especially when the United States is distracted, as you talked about. But also, they think that the Trump administration is withdrawing from the world. Now, that's not exactly true, but that's the way they view it. And so they think that there is a vacuum, that they've got an historic opportunity to do this. And that's why Xi Jinping had about 70 countries in his capital just yesterday and the day before that on his One Belt, One Road summit, which is meant to try to have these transportation links between China and Europe and Africa. So they're trying to take advantage of what they see as withdrawal of America from the rest of the world.
To appreciate that, that's Gordon Chang, author of North Korea Takes on the World. Oftentimes he's a contributor to the John Batchelor Show that you can hear almost every night of the week from 9 o'clock at night to 1 in the morning. But most importantly, we have seen the evil seed now of Kim Jong mentally ill spit in our eye behind the kimchi curtain of North Korea. We'll call it the rice cake curtain, whatever you want to call it. By firing that missile high into the stratosphere that could potentially reach Guam with a nuclear weapon. So it's put up or shut up time for the Trump administration, which has been so distracted with so many other mishigosh things going on. But if, in fact, the North Koreans were responsible for this cyber attack that affected 70 nations with this ransomware, a shakedown of the world, well, then it's the world that's got to respond. to a rogue nation that is completely out of control and whose dance master extraordinaire, Red China, seems to be getting a good belly laugh at our expense and the world's expense.
The Drive at 5. On the app, Curtis Sliwa, live.
My boy Curtis Sliwa,
local.
There's a guy in a red hat.
On it.
Everybody listens to Curtis.
77 WABC.
He must be like
as we continue on the drive home at 5, and it's more talk of Russia coming out of the White House, as was exemplified by National Security Advisor to the President McMaster coming out and dealing with the latest controversy late last night.
There's nothing that the President takes more seriously than the security of the American people. The story that came out tonight, as reported, is false. The President and the Foreign Minister reviewed a range of common threats to our two countries, including threats to civil aviation. At no time, were intelligence sources or methods discussed. And the President did not disclose any military operations that were not already publicly known. Two other senior officials who were present, including the Secretary of State, remember the meeting the same way and have said so. Their on-the-record accounts should outweigh those of anonymous sources. And I was in the room. It didn't happen.
Slam dunk, not for many. Let's go to Paul Molshine, columnist for the New York Star Ledger. Thanks for jumping on board again on the drive home at 5, Paul.
Thanks for having me.
So it's Russia again in the air coming out of Washington. What do you make of all this?
Well, today I had an interview with Stephen F. Cohen. He's a Russia expert, lives in New York City, used to be a professor at NYU and Princeton. He's probably the leading Russia expert in America. And he doesn't buy any of this demonization of Russia. It's silly. These people are trying to fight the Cold War when the communists were actually moving up through Central America to Mexico and were actually trying to get right on our border. With now, where they're back fighting to save Ukraine, which nobody even knows. But by the way, there was a survey that showed the less a person knows about where Ukraine is, the more they want the U.S. to intervene there. So we're in this silliness where these neocons and liberal internationalists, the New York Times, the Washington Post, have all decided that Russia is our enemy when we have nothing to fight with Russia over. We're on the same side against ISIS. It's insanity.
And how ironic, Paul Molshine, that many of the people now speaking out against Russia, when they were first making their bones in college or during graduate school, we're actually supporting the Russian side in the Cold War with the old Soviet Union that we had.
Yeah, I was down in Nicaragua, which was a Russian front state in 1985 and 1987 during the Cold War. And all these American kids were running around down there supporting the communists, the Sandinistas. In fact, they had a term for the kids, the Americans. They called them the Sandalistas because they all wore Birkenstocks. And there were Russian tanks, Russian helicopters, Russian trucks all over, you know, on our continent. Now, that was a threat. Now they're thrown back to their old borders from pre-World War One, I think. So it's just silly that we think they're somehow a threat. And when it comes to Syria, where they're fighting the ISIS, that's 400 miles from their border. That's as if ISIS were just a short drive down in Mexico. And would we be down there fighting ISIS? You bet we would. Yet all the neocons want to keep Russia from fighting ISIS. I don't know why. It's absolutely crazy. And Trump, to his credit, at least wants to fight ISIS.
Well, it's interesting. The mayor of New York City, de Blasio, was a Sandinista along with his wife, as was Ron Kuby, that I do the show with 12 to 3 in the afternoons, and his beloved Marilyn. And now you listen to both of them, and it's like, wait a second. That was the Russia you embraced against the United States. Now everything is anti-Russia.
It's crazy. I mean, they've just decided that I don't know why they hate Russia. I think there's this grand game going on where the real hardcore Likudniks in Israel think that they need to defeat Putin because Iran smuggles arms through Syria to Hezbollah. And that's all they care about, which is fine. I mean, that's their interest. But our interest is in getting rid of ISIS, and Russia is our ally in that.
But how, Paul Molshine, can Trump get beyond this saturation coverage of whether there was involvement in his campaign or not by Russia? and all these other issues that seem to be popping up surrounding Russia.
This is the craziest thing I've ever heard. They keep saying they meddled in our election. Well, what did they do? I mean, if they had gotten in and fixed the results on some voting machines on computers, okay, that would be something. But they're saying that they were behind the hacking of the Democratic National Committee computers, which then went on WikiLeaks, which had absolutely nothing in it that anybody even remembers. I don't think I follow it closely, and I forgot everything that was in there. It didn't affect the election at all, and they don't know who did it. Russia's filled with hackers. It couldn't necessarily wasn't a Russian. And this is supposed to be they influenced our election. Well, it's absolute nonsense. No one is even proposing a mechanism by which they influenced our election. And we, of course, were influencing elections all the time in the Cold War. We were influencing the elections in Nicaragua successfully. We got the Sandinistas voted out with heavy influence, including arming the Contras. We influenced Poland, you know, when Lech Walesa, we were helping him and against the Russians in their elections. Everybody interferes in other countries' elections. I mean, Obama went over to England and told them not to vote for Brexit. This hatred of Russia is just bizarre.
Well, do appreciate that. That's Paul Molschein, columnist for the New York Star Ledger. You can check out his column. Going back to a Cold War with Russia is not a hot idea. History experts warn. Just check it online at the New York Star Ledger.
Deep connections, deep understanding.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
He's a man of the people.
77 WABC.
As we continue on the drive home at 5, ladies and gentlemen, you may have seen these fidget spinners that have gone viral. And it's caused all kinds of problems for parents trying to find them because many of them have been bought off the shelves and are not available. Others have caused teachers all kinds of problems in the classroom. And it was I'm not quite sure exactly what it is. So let me go to an expert here, Bill Ervolino of The Record, who wrote this piece about fidget spinners that are driving some teachers to distraction. Thanks for joining us on the Drive Home at 5 again, Bill.
Thanks for having me. How you doing?
I've had better days. But hey, what's up with a fidget spinner to begin with?
If I can set this up for you, a couple of months ago, I had met these two friends of a friend. Two guys in their late 20s who had never seen The Godfather. I invite them to my house to see the movie. Sit down, I make some ziti, nice night. One of them's watching intently, the other one's got his phone in front of him, and he's playing Angry Birds. And I said, "What are you doing?" And he said, I can't sit still. I can't. It's hard for me to watch a movie." I think more and more people are having trouble concentrating. And supposedly these little toys, which have been all over the place, I mean, the convenience store everywhere is selling them now, seems to calm some people down, help them out, and help them to focus. This is supposedly the thing. Now, it was reported that it was very good for kids with autism and for kids that had ADHD and adults. I also have ADHD. This has been disputed, however. Some people say it's good for a little while. But they spin these things, and some of them light up, and they make noise. And not having kids, I never even knew about it until it was brought up to me. And then I go online, and I see that they're being banned in Scotland and England and here and New Jersey. Schools are banning them because kids are playing with them in class.
Okay, but when we were kids growing up, we had spinners. It was called tops. You would take the little piece of twine, you'd put it around the top.
Exactly.
You would toss it and crack, hopefully, another top and knock it right out of the circle. And it would spin and spin and spin, and it would be like a whirling dervish. If you watched it enough, you'd be in a drug-induced psychosis without having to take LSD.
I spoke to this one teacher out here in Morristown who told me that they spin it in class, they're spinning it on their nose, they put it on their toe. I went to Holy Cross in Flushing, all right, class of 72. If I had been spinning this thing in class, they'd still be digging my head out of the blackboard, all right, because it was like not that kind of thing. You never did anything like that. You paid attention. I don't know. I don't want to criticize because people who say that it does help their children They feel annoyed now that it's being banned because it's become such a fad. But kids love it. They pick it up, and I have two of them now. One is a Batman one that I love. It doesn't really do anything but spin around. The other one is yellow. It has lights. It makes a little noise. And, you know, I guess, I don't know. It just seems to, if you have trouble focusing on one thing, you do this, and this helps you calm down a little.
Oh, so it is a stress reducer.
It reduces stress. It reduces anxiety. If it works for you. I mean, it doesn't work for everybody. But now, supposedly, if you're sitting in class and you fidget a lot, you play with this and spin it around, and I'm listening to you teach me geometry or something, and this helps me focus. I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine that that's going to do that, but that's what people have said.
Well, I got to tell you, Bill, in our time also, there was Silly Putty. You know, it came in that little plastic egg. You would keep it in the palm of your hand so you could squeeze it whenever you were getting an anger management moment. Then you could put it on, like, the newspaper that day of Richard Nixon. You could take his picture, right? And then you could sort of push it and pull it out in all different directions. So if you were a sadist, you could actually get the light out of that.
I mean, I used to take the Silly Putty and I'd make, like, the Dick Tracy, you know, I'd go into the comics and make the copies, and then you would move it onto another piece of paper or whatever. They have, I think they're called tension balls.
That's these right, tension balls, that's
foam,
right.
These foam things that you squeeze, and that's supposed to help you. But I don't quite understand how that works. And I think one of the problems that teachers have is that they give it to one kid, and all the other kids are looking at it. And they all want to play with it. And it's like, I play with my thing, you want to play with your thing. I mean, it's like, it's kind of seductive, actually. And some of the older kids, I was told, after a month or so, they get bored with it. But others are just finding all these things to do with it. Like I said, spin it on their nose, on their toe, move it from one finger to the other.
And I noticed, Bill, that it's drived a lot of parents and grandparents mashug because they try to find it now in the open marketplace, you know, for anywhere from $10 to $20. They can't find it, so they go on Facebook. They're setting up Facebook pages. Please help us find these fidget spinners.
And I went to a street fair in Bethpage on Long Island a couple of weeks ago, and every table was selling them.
Every table?
Everybody. If you sell scarves, you were selling them. If you sell ice cream, you were selling them. Everybody was
selling them. Is this sort of similar to the old Rubik Cube? Remember when you couldn't find the Rubik Cube because they were flying off the shelves?
Yeah, I guess. But, I mean, this thing, I mean, you could probably make your own. I mean, it's a little nothing. It's just that it spins around. It's got ball bearings in it. It spins around. I mean, anybody with kids knows what it is because every kid has got one.
I understand, but Bill, it was so much easier. We would get a little bottle cap. We would melt some wax in the bottle cap. We would make a little square board on the asphalt or in the driveway, right? And would be a skelly court.
Skelly, yes.
That's right. And you,
skelly.
Yeah, that's right. And you would knock out the other skelly players, you know, if you were dexterous with your fingers. It seemed to be so much better. Plus, you could work off weight because you'd have to run around the skelly board. I have a feeling that with these fidget spinners, if anything, you get fat, 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 fatter.
I liked skelly, and I loved when they opened up in the school behind me, when they opened up in the summer for like a recreation center, they had knock hockey.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, I couldn't stop. But that's something, when you're a kid, when something captures your attention like that, you go crazy, and that's why they get, like, well, I'm the same way. I mean, I could play Tetris for 8 hours straight, and it, you know, I mean, kids say they don't even know what it is. It's 100 years old.
Well, I tell you what, I learned something very important about you, Bill Ervolino, today of the record, is that you have attention deficit disorder. So as a result of that, I'm going to let you go back to your fidget spinners, which are the new fad toy, and you got to check out Bill Ervolino's article. His column. Just go online. It's fidget spinners are driving some teachers to distraction.
Curtis Sliwa, the deepest knowledge of the city.
You'll be the next mayor of the city of New York.
The Drive at 5, 77 WABC.
As we continue here in the Drive Home at 5, it's a mob talk extravaganza. One of my favorite points of discussion that you're not going to hear on other stations because, and they always point to me and said, hey, weren't you the guy who got shot with 5 hollow point bullets in the back of that cab in June 19th of 1992 on the orders of John Gotti Sr. to John Gotti Jr. and to their Jadrules of the Gambino crime family? And I say, yes. And they say, that's why we take the code of Omerta. But enough of this Omerta. Could you imagine the chutzpah? Could you imagine the culiones? as supporters packed a Manhattan federal courthouse yesterday to cheer on the Genovese couple from Arthur Avenue in the Bronx, Pasquale Pazzi Perello, as he pled guilty to extortion charges. Now, he extorted a Roman Catholic priest, right? And they're applauding him for doing that, plus a couple of hard-working plumbers. And so Perello turns to the crowd and he goes, "Thanks for coming, everybody. I'm okay." At the age of 72, and they're screaming back, "We love you, we love you, buona fortuna per cent'anni," which means good fortune, hope to you live to 100. And they kept shouting their support, some of them blowing kisses at Perello, or standing to pay tribute to him as he was cuffed and chained by U.S. Marshals and brought back to federal prison where he has been since his arrest last year. And look at Perello at the age of 72. He looked all buffed, right? Hey, prison has done him well. As he goes in, he starts pounding the dumbbells because he's got a muscle between both ears, but he's been pumping iron in prison. Plus, naturally, extorting other prisoners for their commissary as he's flexing his capo credentials in the Genovese crime family. Well, he copped to three counts, admitting that he ordered his minions, his yadrules, his knuckle draggers to beat people up and threaten them over debts. Quote, "I want Buddy to choke him, actually choke the MF-er and tell him, hey, listen to me. The next time I'm going to grab your tongue and pull it right out of your throat." And then another time he said, "I'm going to stop choking. I'm going to kill you," Perillo said of a guy who owed $30,000 to the Lucchese crime family. And he was doing a solid for the Lucchese's as the capo of the Genovese crime family on Arthur Avenue in the Bronx. So who was this Lucchese guy that all of a sudden the Genovese capo, Pasquale Pazzi Perello, would do a solid for? His name? Pasquale. Mustache Pat Capilano. In fact, Perello, who ran his crew out of his Red Sauce restaurant, Pasquale's Rigoletto on Arthur Avenue in the Bronx, faces between 5 and 7 years in the slammer when he is sentenced on September 7th. And I know so many of you say, hey, you know, the geriatric espresso sipping psychotic killers of organized crime, they're all old, they're feeble. Really? In the case of Pasquale Pazzi Perello, he's gone to jail, he's all buffed up, he's pumping iron, and he's still calling the shots, not from Arthur Avenue, but his prison cell. You need to set an example for these guys, because remember, it's the evil seeds that will follow. Their sons, their grandsons, their nephews, and they will continue to torture, they will continue to extort, they will continue to shake down members of their community, and most times get away with it. On those rare occasions when the code of omerta is violated, that's when we read about them in the headlines. But trust me, as weakened as they have become, whether they're the Gambinos or the Genovese, whether they're Lucchese's or Colombo's or Panano's, or even the delisted Di Calvacante family across the Hudson River in New Jersey, they're still a force to be reckoned with when it comes to drugs, when it comes to gambling, when it comes to prostitution, shakedown extortion, bending your leg and stuffing it in your pocket. So to you, Genovese capo Pasquale Pazzi Perello, I hope that as you stir the marinara sauce in jail with your macaroni, you choke on those ziti's, right? Al dente.